One.
They're not a question of additional benefits. I mean, they touch every aspect of life. Your partner is sick. Social Security. I mean, it's pervasive. It's not as though, well, there's this little federal sphere, and it's only a tax question. It's as Justice Kennedy said, 1,100 statutes, and it affects every area of life. And so you would be really diminishing what the state has said is marriage. You're saying, no, state, there are two kinds of marriages, the full marriage and then the sort of skim milk marriage.
All right, it is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for tuning in. Man, oh man, have we got a show for you tonight. We have got all kinds of things going on. We got the Arizona trans bigotry bill, the Kavanaugh, that guy. They had a hearing last night. We got clips. We got guests coming in to give a report. And we have a full background on this with Abby Jensen. We're going to be getting to that at the bottom of the hour. We actually have a pre-recorded interview that we did with Abby yesterday, and so we're going to play that. And then later on in the show, not only are we going to have Abby calling in live to talk about what happened at the hearing last night, spoiler alert, it didn't go well. And we're also going to have John Becker, formerly of Truth Wins Out. He is going to be calling in. He was at the Supreme Court building in Washington, D.C. yesterday when they had a situation with the Human Rights Campaign where apparently somebody holding a transgender rights flag was asked to take it down. And there was a whole incident around that. We are going to get John. He was there. We're going to talk to him a little bit later at in the beginning of our next hour. We got all kinds of stuff to talk about. And you know, I'll tell you, I'll let other people handle the details because, you know, people who were there, we'll talk to John. We'll talk to Abby later. You know, people who are at these things. But I'll tell you, you know, for myself, I'm hearing about this thing with the Human Rights Campaign, and I should say, we're going to have John Becker on to talk about his side, what he saw, what he heard. But, you know, I also, just to make clear, I want to make clear, I reached out to the Human Rights Campaign today, and I said, you know, hey, you know, have somebody on. You know, what happened on your side? Well, they never got back to me. We did reach out. They did not respond. But we do have their statement that they issued to Q-Notes. Matt Comer over at Q-Notes did write a story today, published a story. And they did issue a statement, a public statement on this. We will be getting to that a little bit later in the show. But, you know, I have to tell you, it makes you wonder, when you hear stuff like this with the Human Rights Campaign, they know how sensitive the situation is. There's a lot of tension between the transgender community and the HRC. There has been for years. They've been doing all these things to try and demonstrate that things are different now. And then they go do something like this. And it really, you know, it just seems like this is an organization. I hate to say this, you know, because I did have hopes. And I'll admit, I still do.
Makes you scratch your head a little bit.
Yeah. It's like every time they start to make progress, they shoot themselves in the foot by doing something stupid like this.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes me crazy, in a sense, because, you know, if they were really a little bit more, I don't know what the word for it is, a little bit more in tune with the rest of the community, if they weren't so separate, so, I don't know what the word for it is, bubbleized, so deep within that wealthy gay elite thing, that they, you know, if they had a real connection to the community, and they really understood what was going on in LGBT America in 2013, if they really had that connection, then they would, you would think that somebody at the Human Rights Campaign would understand that doing stuff like this is not going to help your case. I mean, you know, I'll tell you the truth. I found this whole thing, and like I say, we will get into the details a little bit later. It's disappointing because on top of saying you did a bad thing, on top of saying, oh, well, you know, you really behaved badly, it shows you don't get it. It shows you don't, you're not connecting with the rest of the community. Now, speaking of not connecting with the community, our other big story tonight is, of course, the Arizona, what I've been calling anyway, the Arizona trans bigotry bill. Now, this thing is just amazing. It's unbelievable. And what's more unbelievable is this thing is so bigoted, so out of control, ridiculous, that even MSNBC covered this. And you know they don't cover anything for us. I mean, not anything that, you know, matters, like when we get civil rights or when something happens in Congress regarding us. I mean, you know, this was so unbelievably ridiculous and bigoted that even, you know, the six-figure liberals over at MSNBC covered us on this one. And just to give you a rundown, I mean, we're going to get into more detail with this when we play the interview we did with Abby Jensen, who, of course, is an activist in Arizona, a lawyer as well. She gave us the rundown on what this bill was, and we'll get into more of the detail. But basically, the first version of this bill was going to make transgender people criminals if they use the bathroom. Literally, we're talking jail time here. I mean, do these people ever learn? Honestly? And so there was a hearing last night. And of course, what happened was the first version of this bill would have made it a misdemeanor to use a bathroom that wasn't in concert with a trans person's birth certificate, punishable by, get this, $2,500 fine and 6 months in jail. 6 fucking months in jail. Can you believe this shit? Well, it was so ridiculous that even the Republicans in Arizona finally had to say, all right, all right, all right. This is a little bit much for us. Yes. Even the guy who wrote the fucking thing said it was too much. Yeah. But it just goes to show you where the headspace was when they started this whole thing. There was no emergency. There was no, there was no overwhelming thing going on. This is, as one of the people put it in the hearing, this is a solution in search of a problem. And so what they did was there was such a reaction to this thing, such a reaction, that they backed off of this. The guy who did it, State Senator John Kavanaugh, he rewrote the bill. And now, instead of criminalizing trans people, what it does is it basically rewrites the new anti-discrimination law passed in Phoenix that prohibits that kind of discrimination, making people, discriminating against people in use of bathrooms in public areas and things like that. Okay, but it would also rewrite a 12-year-old law from Tucson passed in 1999. Another law recently passed in Flagstaff. I mean, that's what they're doing, is they're basically saying, no, you're local city governments, sorry, you're being too permissive. You're treating your transgender citizens too nicely, and we have to put a stop to it. That's what's going on here. I mean, it is unbelievably bigoted at its core. I mean, yeah, and it was hysterical, because I watched part of this hearing last night, and you know, the guy who was doing it, and unfortunately, he made this closing statement, and right in the middle of the closing statement, the video feed went out. But, I mean, it was just amazing. This guy really seemed to believe that, oh, well, we're not going to throw you in jail anymore, so it's more reasonable that way. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to give your local business owners the right to decide what your gender is and then allow or disallow you to use public spaces based on their judgment. I mean, it is beyond
crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm like lost for words, and that's usually something I am. Okay, I mean, it is absolutely stunning. And so basically what they're saying is, no, we're not going to throw you in jail, trans people, but we're going to let the local baker and the local guy who owns the local coffee house decide whether you're a man or woman and issue you rights accordingly in their establishment as they happen to feel it. Well, if they're bigoted and they decide to deny you rights, if you're a young woman and you happen to be wearing jeans that day and a baggy shirt, well, you know, then you may not be able to use the ladies' room. If you're a guy and you're wearing pink and have long hair and they decide that you look like a woman, well, guess what? You're not going to be allowed to use the ladies' room. It's no longer your gender presentation and what it means is no longer up to you in the state of Arizona. It's up to the guy who happens to own the business you walk into when you go in for a can of Pepsi. I mean, seriously, and this is what they consider reasonable. Okay, well, let's not forget also, this is Arizona, the same state of the Papers, Please law. And I gotta say this. I've been paying attention pretty much all day. I was out for a couple of hours today, but for most of the day I've been sitting in front of the computer putting together the show. And I've been paying attention to what people have been talking about online, on Facebook, or what the news stories are. And with the all I've been hearing all day, and it's understandable, I guess, to a point, but all I've been hearing all day is, can you guess? Marriage, 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 oh, and marriage, marriage, marriage. And oh, yeah, and marriage and also marriage. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like, did anybody, it's hysterical. All the news stories that I collected today about the Arizona law that happened yesterday, this hearing that took place, all came from local newspapers. I mean, excuse me. I with one exception, was the Huffington Post Gay Voices had a story. But pretty much our LGBT media pretty much ignored that story. It has completely, as far as I can tell, ignored this HRC flag story. There's also another part of this story that people are reporting that involved an immigrants' rights group. We have a clip from that. We will be playing that a little bit later on in the show. And none of these stories got any coverage. Nothing. It was all marriage, marriage, marriage. And you know what? Marriage is important. Don't get me wrong. But you know what? I mean, please, people, you're journalists. Other things besides marriage happen today, and they matter too. For God's sakes, this is one of the most bigoted laws to come across the transom since the Papers, Please law, and not one of you reports on it? Come on. I mean, seriously, please. I mean, honestly, you know, I'm not saying that marriage isn't important. Of course it's important. It matters. We opened with a Ruth Bader Ginsburg quote. Of course it was a key thing, you know, I'll talk a little bit about that in a minute. But I mean, other things went on. You know, both of these trans relevant stories completely ignored by our LGBT media, even while the mainstream media in those local areas was covering it, the Arizona story anyway. I mean, I learned more about this flag thing on Facebook than I did from our own media. We got one story from Matt Comer of QNotes out in North Carolina. At least kudos to him for at least reporting on this. And, you know, There was also this other organization. Now, we have some clips. Another thing I want to talk about. We got a couple of minutes, then we got to go to a break. Then we'll be coming back with the you won't hear me live. You will be hearing the Abby Jensen interview that we did yesterday, and then we will come back live. And after that, well, we'll see what happens. So. I just want to point out that you know, this was a gay marriage. Basically, yesterday they were talking about Prop 8. From what I've been reading, looks like they're going to it's going to be a California-relevant decision. Probably California will get same-sex marriage back, but nobody else is going to be impacted. At least that's what the experts seem to be saying. As far as don't ask, don't tell. Hello. As far as the Defense of Marriage Act goes, it looks like that sucker is going down. But then again, you know, I only a fool bets on the Supreme Court, because nobody thought that Obamacare was going to survive, and it did. So I would not go and start making predictions. From what I understand, probably beginning of June is when they're going to be dealing with this, when they're going to be handing down a decision. So we have hopes. I mean, I believe that even on the worst case scenario, something good for LGBT married couples will come out of this, is my belief and my hope. So in the meantime, we are going to go to our first break. We have got Coyote Grace, Now Take Flight. We'll see you in 5, gang.
Imagine trying to find a safe place to relieve your bladder 8 to 10 times a day, every day. Imagine having to ask permission to do so 8 to 10 times a day, every day. This discriminatory and unconstitutional bill addresses a problem that does not exist. There are no data linking transgender individuals to sex crimes in any role other than a victim. The real problem is that one transgender person is murdered every 36 hours, sometimes in a public restroom, and always because someone felt uncomfortable. So why does a guy like me care about public health, much less the bathroom bill? Well, I spent the first 36 years of my life trying to live in a female body I was born into. I barely survived it. I am happier and healthier now than I've ever been, and a lot of it is due to the fact that I'm no longer forced to use the ladies' room. Believe me, I was way more uncomfortable there than any woman ever was.
All right, we're back. It is the Rebecca Juro Show, and we've got a special guest tonight. We've got Abby Jensen from Arizona. She is a lawyer. She is an activist, a transgender activist. And we're talking about this, frankly, insane bill that's going through the Arizona state legislature, the original version of which would have criminalized transgender people who try to use a bathroom in concert with their own gender identity. And Abby, I know you've been involved in this effort to oppose this, and why don't you explain to us first what was the original bill? And what would that have done exactly?
Yeah, both the bills are sponsored by Representative John Kavanaugh, who's the chair of the House Appropriations Committee, so he's got a fair amount of power. And he's from Fountain Hills, which is a fairly well-to-do suburb northeast of Phoenix.
And he's a Republican, we should point out.
Yes, he's a Republican,
well,
as
well.
The vast majority of legislators in Arizona, although it's not quite as bad this year, this session, as it has been in the past. The Democrats did a little bit better the last election. So anyway, the first bill is, we dubbed the papers the P bill, because what it said is that it made it a class one misdemeanor, disorderly conduct, for anyone to use a restroom, locker room, any sex-segregated space, if their birth certificate did not match the sign on the door. And I was surprised that Kavanaugh said during one of his interviews that he understood that transgender people can change their birth certificates if they have surgery, and that he was fine if somebody had gone through all that process and had female genitals, then it was okay for a trans woman to use a women's restroom. But otherwise, he said that the vast majority of people shouldn't have to be uncomfortable because there was a few weirdos.
He does realize that ladies' rooms have stalls with doors on them, and because I'm not, obviously as well versed in this bill as you are, but it seems to make no sense to me that it's a person who says, well, if you have the surgery, then magically it's okay. And suddenly you're a threat if you have a penis, but if you've had a surgically reconstructed vagina, suddenly you're no longer a threat. I mean, is that really what this guy was trying to argue?
Yeah, he was. This was a direct response. He said this several times to the passage about 4 weeks ago now of an amendment to the city of Phoenix's non-discrimination ordinance to extend protections for sexual orientation and gender identity discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations.
Right, and let's also be clear that what this bill is originally, the impetus for this, is it's a response to this Phoenix law that was just passed, which is very progressive and gave transgender people non-discrimination rights. And he's basically saying, no, the state is going to overrule you and take these rights back. Basically, isn't that really the case?
Exactly. Kathy Herod, who is executive director of the Center for Arizona Policy, which is a very right-wing lobbying organization, and she is the most powerful lobbyist in the state, tried to defeat the Phoenix ordinance by labeling it a bathroom bill and telling everybody that it would allow men in dresses to go into women's restrooms and rape our daughters, was the gist of it. And he ignored, of course, the fact that the week before, the city of Flagstaff had just done the same thing, and the city of Tucson, where I'm now living, has had those kind of protections since 1999.
And we should point out as well that there has never in the entire history of all these other anti-discrimination laws, there has never been a case of this kind of thing actually happening. Is there, that you know of?
There isn't. There was one staged incident in Baltimore by the opponents to a bill to do the same thing there, who had a man dress in a dress and go into the women's locker room at a gym and be filmed so that they could, say, see, it happens. And that was quickly discredited. But no, it's in fact, it is trans women who get attacked in restrooms. I mean, Chrissy Paulus in Baltimore, I guess it was a couple of years ago, who used the restroom at the McDonald's and
yes.
came out and two young women beat her to the floor to the point where she was having epileptic seizures.
Uh-huh.
And eventually they were captured, but she didn't do anything but go to the bathroom.
Yeah. And okay, so now what happened next, as I understand it, and you can hopefully provide some more details on this, my understanding is that this went viral. It went viral online. It went viral. We saw it reported on Melissa Harris Perry show, Alex Witt on MSNBC, the Washington Post. I was looking at articles. Basically, it hit the media, the mainstream media, really, and it became almost a running joke, it seemed like. And then this legislator, John Kavanaugh, backed off and he reworked the bill so that now it's not an issue of criminalization. In other words, transgender people don't face actual criminal charges, but it allows businesses to ban transgender people from using their bathrooms and exempts them from provisions in local laws that would make that illegal. Is that, am I got that right?
Right. I mean, he was ridiculed so much, and we had a turnout of in the neighborhood of 300 people representing the trans community and allies that showed up at the hearing a week ago today, where the original bill was supposed to be heard, and he claimed that there was a technical amendment or problem, and so the bill couldn't be heard. But it seems pretty clear that he was, intimidated by the opposition we were able to muster in really a day and a half. I woke up at 5:15 on Tuesday morning last week, saw the first post about this bill, and immediately went into action. And by Wednesday afternoon at 2 o'clock, we turned out 300 people plus, a viral media campaign. So he backed off. He wasn't sure what was going to happen. He was also blocked from using the original bill that he was going to use as a vehicle to insert his papers to pee bill. And on Sunday night, he was on a political talk show on a local Phoenix TV station where he announced he was adopting this new approach. And then Monday afternoon, the new bill was filed.
Explain the details of it and why you decided to do this.
Sure. And while it deals with bathrooms, I think the more critical and troubling areas where you would have transgendered people who can be someone who is biologically male in all ways, other than the fact that in their mind they think they're female, that you could have them not only in a bathroom, but you could have them in a woman's locker room, a woman's dressing room, a woman's public shower, naked in front of women and young girls. And that's not acceptable. I originally tried to approach this problem by making it a disorderly conduct offense to be of one sex and go into the restroom of another. However, I have scrapped that idea. I was criticized because it involved criminalization and more law. And you know what? It's right. And I've changed it. All I'm going to do now is I'm simply going to draw a line on how far a municipality can go in terms of transgendered rights. This is what many of the other jurisdictions that have such bills have done. And the new bill will simply say...
So you're watering down the bill.
I've changed it. The new bill is simply going to say that a local government cannot pass a ordinance that allows transgendered people to sue businesses or the city to charge businesses criminally if they do not allow transgendered people into any restroom. It'll be the choice of the business.
What it says is that regulation of access to private areas, which he defines as restrooms, locker rooms, etc., that are distinctly private, and that the state those are regulating those access to those areas is of primary concern to the state, and so any local ordinance or attempt to regulate access to those spaces based on gender identity or expression are void and unenforceable, and
What this is really doing, this new version of the law, is it's really saying that local cities and other local jurisdictions have a limit as to how far they can go in terms of protecting their transgender citizens from discrimination. Isn't that really the real effect
exactly
there?
They're carving out a specific, really physical area, your space, over which the state is saying, local governments cannot have any jurisdiction to regulate access. And then the bill goes on to say that no business owner or any other property owner can be sued or held criminally liable for regulating access to private areas on their property based on gender identity or expression. So as a result, you could the soccer mom in sweatpants and a baseball cap could be turned away from the restroom because somebody decides they don't like that person's gender expression because they and they should have a dress on, or the hyper masculine man could be turned away from the men's room because somebody decides they don't like his gender expression.
Let's talk about this in realistic terms. At ground level, average everyday terms, what this really means is it puts the determination of to who is allowed in any given bathroom in the hands of an untrained business owner, as opposed to being defined specifically by law.
Exactly. And the other problematic impact of this is with all the publicity and everything, this is basically a license to discriminate, saying, hey, business owners, do whatever the hell you want. The state and nobody else can interfere with you. So if you don't like a trans person, using your restrooms or locker rooms or whatever, go for it. And so that perception that trans people are fair game is a very dangerous one.
I see. Now, let me ask you another question. I was just recently reading, apparently, that this whole thing has triggered off an effort to recall this legislator from office. Is that true? Do you know anything about that?
I do. There's I think it's a newly formed organization called Raise the Bar Arizona that I believe it was on Thursday filed recall petitions to recall Representative Kavanaugh because he was wasting time on matters that are of no importance, including this bill, and there's a fair chance that that they might actually be able to collect the sufficient signatures. I think it's about 17,000 to force an election. And Arizona, 2-3 years ago, for the first time, recalled a sitting legislator. It was Senator Russell Pierce, who was the prime sponsor and advocate for Arizona's infamous SB 1070 Papers, Please law. So what we had gone to with Kavanaugh's original bill, we've gone to saying, police can demand papers of and detain people because they don't look right racially or ethnically, to, now they don't look right, with respect to gender, and so we can demand they have papers. So,
Now another thing. I know there's a hearing that's actually taking place very very soon. Actually, as we speak, as we're recording this. But if you've been around this, you know the progress. What is your opinion? Your estimation? Does this thing have a chance of becoming law? And if so, do you have an idea of how likely that is?
The Arizona legislature is impossible to predict when they sink their teeth into some kind of, social policy issue like this, where they just, they get their backs up and think that, this is just wrong and shouldn't matter and we need to protect family values. Our hope is that we'll be able to stop it in the Senate. It's pretty likely this hearing is going on right now as we speak. And it's pretty likely that it will pass out of committee. It's pretty likely that it will pass the House and be sent back to the Senate. We hope to be able to defeat it in the Senate. We only need 3 Republican votes in the Senate to defeat the bill there, and that's our hope. We would love to beat it down.
Do you have an opinion as to how likely being able to beat it back in the Senate would be?
Well, You know, I'm scared. Tony Dorsey, who is the executive director of This Is How, the trans support organization and shelter in Phoenix, who is pretty much de facto leading this effort, is confident that we can beat it in the Senate. I personally don't know because I just haven't followed this legislature very very much.
I see. Okay, we actually had Tony on the show just recently on a different issue, but okay. And tell me a little bit about the organization here. I mean, is there a strong activist force? Opposing this? I mean, or is there a significant number of people, not only trans folks, but allies who are getting behind stopping this thing?
There is now. I mean, we really have created this campaign from the ground up. I mean, we had pre-existing connections and relationships through an organization that we formed several years ago called the Arizona Trans Alliance, but which hadn't been very active for a while. But we have we have lots of support from allies. The Arizona Center for Disability Laws, who is headed by a Perry Jude Rachick, who is a former executive director of the Gay and Lesbian Task Force, is the executive director of the Disability Law Center here, and she's very much in opposition to this, and she has good contacts. We have had support and are in communication with GLAAD, the GLAAD, GLAAD, and the GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Advocates and Defenders, the LGBT advocacy law firm in Boston, from the National Center for Transgender Equality, from HRC, from the Task Force, from the Transgender Law Center, and I'm sure I'm leaving somebody else out. But we've got a ongoing communications. They're working together, helping us create media and everything, So it's been incredible the support that we've gotten, and it's really in fact building an organization here that hopefully will be ongoing and be able to be a more permanent fixture on the Arizona political landscape.
Yeah, and so that leads me to I guess one of my final questions, which is, do you see this as instigating something more progressive? I mean, because we hear, I'll tell you, speaking as somebody who lives in New Jersey, we hear these stories about Arizona all the time. And you know, I mean, a lot of us, I think, over here on the East Coast, where, frankly, it's a little bit more liberal, and we say, are these people, like, serious? I mean, they're really, really doing this? And you know, I mean, I know there's a lot of fair-minded, reasonable people. There's Phoenix passes laws, Tucson passes laws, Flagstaff. And then you hear this stuff, papers, please, and this bathroom law. And you're like, is something wrong with, like, the air in Arizona or something? I mean, do you think that there's a progression towards more progressive laws in Arizona? Do you think that's the direction things are going in, or is it still very much an uphill climb?
Well, first I'd have to say that unfortunately these people are very serious and they are very convinced that they are morally right, and so they are very dedicated, and I think there are more and more progressive people in Arizona who are frankly disgusted with the politics here, the regressive politics, and really the whole issue is whether or not we can form an effective organization to start doing grassroots organizing at the local level and begin to elect more moderate to progressive people to the legislature so we can turn around this right-wing onslaught that this state has suffered in for the last, really since I've been here, which was since 1995. So,
Wow. Okay. And is there anything else? What else should people know? People who are, you know, people like me who are not in Arizona, and we don't really understand the local politics that well. What else should people know about this bathroom thing? Are we going to see, like, you know, is this guy going to get booted out, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I think that would be fair, but he's very powerful, and he's been in the legislature for a long time. Our fear, and the fear of the national organizations that we're working with, is that if Arizona passes this bill, it will be, you know, there will be copycat bills all over the country. They tried something similar in they tried something similar to the Papers to Pee bill last year in Tennessee, or 2 years ago in Tennessee, I'm sorry, and it did not, they couldn't get the sufficient sponsors for it to proceed for hearings. But they did in fact pass a bill that prohibited local jurisdictions from adopting any kind of protections for, you know, not just trans people, but LGBT people entirely, and that invalidated a Nashville statute. So they're very afraid that this will become a model elsewhere to, you know, basically legalize discrimination against, you know, anyone who doesn't look like the way somebody else thinks they should look to use a certain restroom or other facility.
And is there, I don't know if you can provide this, but do you know of, is there any way that folks outside the state who want to help support the effort to beat this back, is there any way that anything, a website we can go to, people we should contact, or any other way that we can contribute to this effort?
Yeah, the easiest place to find at this point is a website that is just www.papers2p, and it's the two is T-O, not the numeral two, 2p.org. We're posting talking points there, links to email legislators, et cetera. There's also a Facebook page, a little difficult to identify, but if you search for ID2PEE, you should be able to find that page. That's really the hub on Facebook for links and activism updates on status, et cetera. We hope to, if the bill passes out of committee today, we hope to, you know, begin an even stronger campaign tomorrow. And you know, we will be posting those things on Facebook, on that website. We will, be getting the national organizations to tweet it out. We do have a specific Twitter account that you can follow, and a hashtag. The Twitter is at NoLou, so L-O-O. Numeral for you, so no Lou for you. That's the Twitter account, and the hashtag is the same, no Lou for you. And that's a place on Twitter to keep track. And there is live tweeting going on as we speak from the hearings.
Okay, and of course, I want to let people know that as you're listening to this, we will also be having a little bit later in the show a live report from Abby, telling us what happened at the hearing that is going on while we're recording this interview.
Time warp.
So I want to make sure people stick around for that, because we're going to have lots more information and with Abby when we get her on the phone later on in the show. So be sure to stick around for that. And Abby, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And we will look forward to talking to you again later on in the show and hearing what happened at the hearing and where we're going from here.
Thanks, Becky. I enjoyed it very much. I look forward to talking to you.
I enjoyed it too. Thanks so much. And that was Abby Jensen, activist in Arizona, and talking about the bathroom papers to pee law. And we will be back after this lovely musical interlude from Mr. Mike. Thank you.
My colleague Gordon had mentioned if we had changed it to colored people, we all know that would be unconstitutional today. Just to add to the crime rates from before, 1 in 12 transgender individuals are murdered. And that doesn't include those that are brutally attacked, just those that have died from a brutal attack. The American Counseling Association has developed competencies in regards to transgender, and one of them deals with being prejudiced. And it is section B3, understand that trans prejudice and transphobia pervades the social and cultural foundations of many institutions and traditions and fosters negative attitudes, high incidence of violence and or hate crimes, and overt hostility towards transgender people. We would be foolish to think that passing this bill today would not increase the crime rates regarding those that are transgender. And Senator Kavanaugh, when you had mentioned being uncomfortable around someone naked in a locker room, that really opens the door for you to be careful what you wish for here in this room, because while I think you all look fabulous, I may be uncomfortable if you were all naked right now. So it just goes to show that what bill is gonna pass next and what are we gonna be discriminated against next. And the former person that was up here had mentioned that the crime rates are so high, as well as that murder statistic that I had mentioned before, that no one in the transgender community is feeling free enough to run around rampant in a locker room or a bathroom and, you know, fully exposed and taunting children with it. I just don't think that that's realistic, and I think that this amendment goes against the clear
constitution. To that point very quickly, again, nobody's saying that transgender people are going to go into locker rooms and taunt. It's just the presence is the issue, right?
All right, we're back. It is the Rebecca Juro Show. Thanks for sticking around. Okay. Now, I was watching this hearing last night. I saw some pretty amazing speeches. Michael Woodward, who is a local Arizona activist, I actually met him in Washington, D.C. back in 2004. Good guy. He was very good. Toni Dorsey, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, she gave a nice little speech. Now, the thing was, of course, they were only being allotted, I think it was 2 or 3 minutes each. So they really, there wasn't a lot of time for people to talk. But Toni was very good. Michael Woodward was very good. There were some others whose I apologize their names. I can't remember them all. It was a lot of people, and they were all really well spoken. Had some pastors there, religious people. I don't know if they're priests or pastors or whatever they call them. You know, they're all different. But some religious folks there who were very good. One of whom I remember was talking about the Golden Rule, which I thought was a great way to approach this. You know, do unto others as you would have others do unto you. Would you really want somebody checking your ID? Would you really want somebody checking your ID when you go to the bathroom? But anyway, so we're going to try and get John Becker, of course, formerly of Truth Wins Out, and good guy, an activist. And, of course, he was at the Supreme Court yesterday outside at the rally, and he witnessed what went down with the Human Rights Campaign staffer and the person with the flag, with the trans flag. And I thought this was all... Let me read a little bit about what went down here. Now, of course, I should point out that it wasn't just the flag. I mean, there was apparently a report that the Human Rights Campaign. Oh, John is on the phone. Okay, so let me give a quick summary of what's been reported, and then we're going to go to John. Okay, basically what they're saying happened here is the Human Rights Campaign was one of the organizations that was involved in this marriage rally that took place outside the United States Supreme Court while the hearing on DOMA was going on. And apparently there was somebody holding a transgender rights flag and was asked repeatedly to remove it from the area. And this was reportedly, somebody said to this person who was carrying the flag, one of the HRC staffers said that marriage is not a transgender issue, which of course is ridiculous, but that's what was reported. So we have John Becker on the line, and he was there with Jeremy Davis, and he saw what was going on. John, how you doing?
Hi, Becky. I'm doing well. It's a pleasure to talk to you. I'm sorry that it's on such a infuriating topic, but yeah, it's a pleasure to be talking to you this evening. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this, because I really wanted to get the perspective of somebody who was actually physically there. Can you tell us what did you see? What happened when this person brought the transgender rights flag? What did you see, and what happened from your perspective?
Well, Jeremy and I were standing right in front of this person. And this person was standing at the very back of the area behind the stage. So, yeah, and the flag was on a pole. It was high, you know, it was high enough where it wasn't in blocking anyone's view of the camera or the camera's view of anyone. Like, it was not in any way interfering physically, like, either with anything, any part of the shot, any part of the conference, you know. So it was, you know, Jeremy and I just noticed the flag was there and thought it was great to have the trans rights flag present at this rally, because, like you said, marriage equality is an issue that affects our entire community, including the transgender members of our community. So we noted the flag's presence as a positive, right? Well, it was one of those things where because it was such a loud, boisterous, exciting, you know, charged atmosphere that I happened to, I took note of something when I found it, when I heard something kind of discordant, and I turned around and I saw this staffer leaning over and talking to this person, and clearly trying to be quiet, and this person was replying back, you know, and saying, you know, indignantly and kind of, you know, shocked, and then saying, you know, and refusing, saying, no, I'm not going anywhere. And so after this staffer left, I said, well, what happened? What's going on? And this person told Jeremy and I that they were asked to remove their flag. And so, you know, and the reason that was given was that they didn't want it in the shot. And we were all very perplexed and offended and you know, and shocked, of course. And, then this incident happened again. This person returned and asked again for this person to voluntarily remove themselves from the camera shot behind the podium where all the speakers were. It was, you know, it felt very icky. It felt so contrary to the spirit of that day. And it was so, you know, so discordant, you know, and so radically different from the real feelings of community that a lot of us were feeling. You know, people were there, you know, all colors of our LGBT rainbow were present at this event. It was really, really wonderful, and it was a monumental moment for our community. And this one particular event really stood out. It was very jarringly different, and both of us who were around and witnessed it were very upset by it. So we were very happy, obviously, that this person did not take the advice of this staff person and stood his ground and kept that flag there the whole time.
Okay. Now, of course, we were trying to get somebody from HRC on the show to give their side. We weren't able to do that. They didn't get back to me in time for the show. But they did issue a press release. I want to read a little bit of this and have you respond to it, because it seems to be – I saw something from Jeremy on Facebook earlier today that basically said – and this sounds pretty accurate – that basically HRC is calling you guys liars, which to me is not very credible, because I've known you for a while. I've known Jeremy a very long time. You're both extremely credible as far as I'm concerned. And this seems to conflict with basically what HRC says here is, and I'm just going to read this part here. It says, it was agreed that featuring American flags in our program was the best way to illustrate this is a unifying issue, which is why when managing the area behind the podium, several people were asked to move who were carrying organizational banners, pride flags, and any other flag that was not an American flag. Several people refused and were allowed to stay. The coalition welcomed the variety of signs and flags throughout the plaza that demonstrated the wonderful diversity of the community. And also said, and this is the part that really kind of puzzles me here, it is not true to suggest that any person or organization was told that their flag was less important than another. This did not occur. And no HRC staff member would ever tolerate such behavior. To be clear, it is the position of the Human Rights Campaign that marriage is an issue that affects everyone in the LGBT community. Does that jibe with what you saw?
It's sad to me to say no, it doesn't. You know, and like you mentioned or you alluded to, I don't have any kind of agenda against HRC, against any LGBT organizations. I'm a silver lining person. I like to assume the best intentions in everyone. So this is not about any kind of axe to grind. But the statement that all non-American flags were asked to be removed, that doesn't jive with what I saw. Jeremy himself was holding a flag that was a non-American flag. It was you know, two interlocking rings that were rainbow colored, and so that clearly not an American flag. And nobody wants to ask him to take it down. There was an incident where somebody came behind all the speakers and tried to hoist up these huge signs that the coalition felt were off message, so they asked somebody who had a large pride flag to try to position themselves in front of this other person's massive signs to block the view. So in that case, the people were actually using a pride flag to try to have message consistency. So the idea that there were no, or the statement that there was no, you know, non-American flag present at that time is not what I saw and not what Jeremy saw. Not true.
Okay. And like I said, as far as I'm concerned, both of you guys, I mean, people know I respect the Human Rights Campaign, but I don't necessarily trust the Human Rights Campaign. Is kind of my position on it. As over the years, we've seen a lot of things that are questionable coming out of that organization. And I'm not assigning this to any particular individual within HRC, but you know, we've whether it's Joe Solomonis or others, we know that honesty is not always the consistent policy with these folks. And the part that that really jumped out at me is when he said that it's not true to suggest that any person or organization was told their flag was less important than another. You know, I don't see anywhere in the statement that they released that they are denying that an HRC staffer, did exactly this. And yet here they say no HRC staffer, no HRC staff member would ever tolerate such behavior. I mean, is this what it seems to me, which is like HRC basically splitting hairs and saying, well, technically nobody actually spoke those words, but the actions and the behavior clearly was the intent was there. I mean, is that fair? Do you think?
I think it is fair, you know, because and like I mentioned, it was a loud environment, so I was not, you know, I couldn't hear word for word what the staffer was asking this person, you know, but the intent was crystal clear. And frankly, you know, whether it was, you know, this we don't consider this a trans issue, or, you know, or it's not important, or whether it was just we don't want you in the shot, even if it was just we don't want you in the shot, what message does that say? What message does it send when you say to somebody, we don't want the trans flag in the shot? Like, that sends a message to that person, and, you know, that this that the trans flag is not important enough or not relevant enough or whatever else to be included. It's a message of exclusivity and a divisive message, and I just wish that, I wish that the HRC would say that they were sorry for what happened, you know? I mean, it's all they would have had to do is to say that they were sorry for what happened, because it did, and it needs to be addressed.
I have to agree with you there. I mean, it seems like, you know, it seems like there's just one line coming out of this organization, and you guys, who, like I say, are highly credible to me, seem to be basically telling us something very different. Now, another thing, I wanted to ask you one more question. You know, I know you got to go, but one thing I wanted to ask you was, there was also another report that there was a Latino organization, an undocumented immigrant organization, that basically said that the Human Rights Campaign attempted to silence them as well. That basically they were told not to talk about their experience as an undocumented immigrant. Did you know of anything like that? Did you witness anything having to do with that particular situation?
The only thing I know about that situation is the social media chat that I've seen online. Today I flew from D.C. to our home in Vermont, so I was in transit for part of the day, so I actually haven't had a chance to watch the video myself. Mm-hmm. The only information that I know about that is the same information I think that most people see. I don't know anything beyond that on that account, but, you know, obviously that's a disconcerting allegation, at the least.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, John, I want to thank you a lot for taking the time. I know this was kind of a little crazy the way we threw this together at the last minute. And I appreciate you coming on. I appreciate your patience with us and, you know, coming on to tell us what was going on, because I think it was so important that we had somebody who was actually there and could talk intelligently about this and really give us the straight poop on this story, because there were so many things. And, you know, when you're getting the reports off the internet, so many times, you know, people, you're not quite sure of which story is credible and which story is not. And so I really appreciate you coming on and talking to us for a little while.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Becky, for the chance to shed light on this incident and hopefully encourage some greater accountability on the part of HRC.
I totally agree. Maybe, hopefully they'll learn a little bit of a lesson from this. It didn't work so well for them the last time they circled the wagons. Maybe I was hoping they'd kind of get that, but, well, we'll see, I guess. Anyway, thanks, John, and we'll talk to you soon.
Great, Becky. Thanks again.
Okay, bye-bye now. All right, and that was John Becker, formerly of Truth Wins Out, and of course, that was his account of what went on there. And I'll tell you, based on what he said, and again, I'll say it again, I find John highly credible.
Yeah.
His story meshes well with what I heard from what Jeremy Davis both posted on Facebook and told me personally. And basically, the HRC was, you know, we have decided that we only want American flags, you know, but, you know, it's okay to block something we don't like with a pride flag. I said this at the beginning of the show, and I'll say it again. It's disappointing because, you know, you want the Human Rights Campaign. This is the largest, most powerful LGBT civil rights organization in the entire country. You want to be able to count on these people. You want to work with them. You want to be able to use that influence to help everyone. You want to be able to rely on people like this. And then you get situations like this where you're hoping that things are changing. You're hoping that maybe, you know, as time goes on, you're progressing. And then something like this happens, and you say, well, you know, I guess they haven't really learned their lesson yet. The 2007 didn't really have the impact that we hoped it would. And I'll tell you, I've been looking all over the internet today And I've been seeing people talking about, you know, starting up rallies at HRC galas and starting to protest them again. And you know, maybe that's what's needed. I you know, it's disappointing that that's what will have to have an impact, if it even does have an impact. But if that's what is gonna be the way that we get through, is that's gonna be the way that we have to have an impact, maybe there's not a choice. Maybe there just isn't a choice. Now, I want to let people know, I know we have Abby Jensen on the line. And you know what? Why don't we push our break back a little bit, Mr. Mike?
Sure.
And we'll talk to Abby. Abby, of course, is the Arizona activist. You heard her at the top of the show, at the beginning, earlier in the show, talking, giving us basically a description of what these bills were, what they are. And, of course, we had this hearing last night. Abby, I know you watched the hearing. Were you there? And what were your thoughts on this hearing? As somebody who's an activist in the state.
Right. I wasn't at the hearing myself. I ostensibly was at work yesterday, although with all I've been doing on this, I'm not sure how much I've gotten done. But so I did watch it online, and actually it was fortunate that the hearing was delayed so that it started basically right after you and I got off the phone last night, so I was able to watch the entire thing. It was a pretty remarkable display of solidarity by the transgender community in Arizona, the lesbian, gay, and bisexual, and straight allies in solidarity against this bill. We estimated there were 300 people there in opposition. We had about 20 people, I think, that spoke in opposition to the bill. There was only one person, a Phoenix business owner, who apparently is somewhat of a gadfly about just getting in the news to speak his piece, who spoke in opposition. But as expected, it did pass out of a committee on a 7-4 party line vote.
So what happens now? Now it's made it through essentially committee, and now it goes to the full Senate, the full House. What happens now?
Actually, the next step is it goes to the House Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee's job supposedly is to review legislation for legal or constitutional problems. I say supposedly because obviously with things like the, you know, SB 1070, the Papers, Please law a few years ago, they don't always do a very good job of that. But there's no chance for testimony or amendments in the Rules Committee, but we are developing a strategy there to present some arguments as to why there's going to be substantial legal problems with this bill, and that passing it will simply lead to another very expensive and protracted legal battle that the state doesn't need. If it passes out of the Rules Committee, then it will go to the House floor. It will probably pass the House. The Republicans no longer have a supermajority in the House, but they do have a substantial majority, so it will likely pass in the House. It will then go to the Senate because the bill originated in the Senate and now it's been, you know, completely gutted and replaced with something entirely new. So the Senate will have to, you know, vote to approve the bill as amended. We hope to stop it in the Senate. There's a much smaller margin of the majority of Republicans in the Senate, and we hope to be able to persuade enough Republicans that this bill is folly, so it doesn't get past that. But if it does, if it goes to Governor Brewer's desk, I mean, I expect she will sign it. There's some possibility that since he's as a lame duck governor and maybe thinking about her legacy, that maybe she would veto it. But I suspect she will sign it, and then it will be a matter for the attorneys to gear up and get it stopped in court.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, and so do you know, is there any other activist actions, events going on around this?
Yes, as a matter of fact, in half an hour at 7 o'clock Arizona time at the state capitol building, there's a protest rally in opposition to SB 1045. We are really gearing up. We've organized several teams to concentrate on, you know, media and protest rallies and communications and legal and various things like that. We're working with all the national organizations. You will be hearing a lot about this bill over the next several weeks. It's a huge threat to the entire country. If this idea that, oh, look, we can just take rights away from trans people, and it slides here in Arizona, that just like the anti-immigration laws here, that other states are going to copy it, and they're going to try and do the same thing, and that's a huge problem. It's no longer just an issue of not giving non-discrimination protections to trans people. This is actively taking them away and basically telling the public that, hey, these people don't deserve protections, and so they're fair game. And so we're very concerned about the impact just on public perception, regardless of the legal impact.
So there's a real movement going on around this thing. Now, let me ask one more question I wanted to ask you. You mentioned the Senate, that it goes to the Senate, and you think that the margins are a little closer there. What do you have an idea of the chance that you'll be able to get this shot down in the Senate? Do you have an estimate on the chances of that actually happening?
Personally, I don't, because I haven't followed the Arizona legislature much at all the last several years. So I've just kind of been disgusted. people who have been following the legislature closely think we've got a pretty good shot at beating it in the Senate. So.
Excellent. Abby, I want to thank you so much for doing the interview and for calling in tonight and all that good stuff. And I hope you're going to keep calling in, keep us informed, and let us know what's going on with this. Because, you know, as this thing goes on, we're going to want to follow this story. And, you know, because this has, if this passes, I mean, the implications for the rest of the country, not only Arizona, are really frankly terrifying for transgender people all over this country. And so I really want to stick with this story as much as we can, and I hope you'll come on and talk to us about it again very soon.
I'd be happy to do that. Can I make a comment on the issue you were just talking before I came on?
Sure, of course.
I know some people that are on the steering committee of HRC Arizona, and I've been in contact with them about this incident and given them my advice as to what HRC needs to do in this situation, which is basically to just fall on their sword and admit that they were incredibly wrong and say that they're sorry, because I don't see any other way that HRC can come out of this other than people just thinking, yep, sure enough, it's just like 2007, it's just like before that, and, you know, any chance of HRC ever repairing its reputation with trans people is going to be lost.
I understand totally what you're saying. Abby, I want to thank you so much for calling in. We actually are going to have Tony Dorsey is going to be calling in, because we're going to be going to a break right after this. Thank you so much, and we will be talking at you soon. Abby, thank you again. All right. Okay, good night. And we are going to go to a break. And in the meantime, Tony Dorsey is going to call in. We had her on the show a couple of weeks ago. She was at the hearing. She spoke at the hearing. We're going to get her take when we come back from break. We will see you in about 5 minutes, gang.
you to break my heart.
My name is Yersaia Redondo. I am undocumented, queer, unashamed, and unafraid. I am sharing these identities with you right now because yesterday morning I was forced back into the closet. The Queer Undocumented Immigrant Project, a project of United We Dream, was invited by the Human Rights Campaign to speak at the rally to repeal the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA.
We must love each other and support each other.
Prior to getting on stage, my speech was revised. I was told not to share the reality of what it means to be an undocumented queer immigrant in this country.
Our real life struggles and daily challenges as LGBTQ people are not acknowledged, but rather continue to be pushed into the closet and excluded from the dominant narrative. It is not enough for LGBTQ communities to say that they are in solidarity with our struggle. Solidarity is love reflected through actions and support. Our intent yesterday was to share our stories, our struggles, and our experiences to shed light on the complexity of the issue, and we weren't even afforded that opportunity.
As an immigrant youth movement, we hold each other accountable, and we will hold LGBTQ and immigrant rights organizations accountable to ensure that we are working towards social justice for all. In order to ensure continued solidarity, we are asking for a public apology from the Human Rights Campaign's leadership.
I am Criswell. This is a story of those in the twilight time. Once human, now monsters. Monsters to be pitied. Monsters to be despised from the innermost depths of the world.
You won. Good heavens.
Oh, my goodness.
Criswell
predicts. Hi, everybody. How you doing? We are back. Oh, my goodness. What a packed show. And we were just talking to Abby Jensen, who, of course, is an Arizona activist. She was watching the hearing. And, of course, somebody who was actually at the hearing and spoke at the hearing was our friend Toni Dorsey, who was just on the show a couple of weeks ago. And she gave a great speech. I personally thought they were a little too short on time, but that's just my opinion. But she was actually there. And Toni, how you doing? I'd love to know what your take was on this. I was watching a lot of stuff going on, and it seemed like these were folks that had already made up their minds and were kind of going through the motions, particularly Senator or Representative Kavanaugh. Seemed to have, it was kind of unswayable, especially based on the result. Was that your take as well?
Very much so, Becky. It's pretty wild to sit there in front of him and realize that this is a man who has absolutely no idea what trans people are about, what any of this is, and Representative Kavanaugh needs to get a serious education, to be honest with you. And as you saw my speech last night, part of the reason that I abandoned my written speech when I was speaking is because it became apparent very, very early on that he thinks that only trans people have a gender identity or gender expression, which to me is just the most idiotic thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah. Let's be honest. I mean, I hate to use this term, but I'm going to use it anyway. A lot of these folks seem like rednecks, you know, that they're just, you know, they've got their own ideas about how the world works, and you're not going to convince them otherwise, no matter what you say. Because I thought there were some excellent points made by a lot of the folks who spoke, not only by you, but by Michael Woodward, by several of the other speakers, some of the religious folks, some of the trans folks. I mean, and yet it seemed like nothing, it was just like there was just this wall there, and it just seemed like nothing was getting through. Those who were on your side were on your side, and those who were not just weren't. And that was... There was no education being done there. It was just people saying their piece and say, okay, next. You know, it didn't seem like there was any real... Is that fair?
That's a pretty fair assessment of it. He, that was a 5.5 or 6 hour meeting with an agenda that just dragged on and on and on before us. And we ended up the last item on the agenda. And his whole, by that time, everybody was exhausted, everybody was tired, including the council members and or the committee members, and nobody really wanted to hear anything more. They'd already argued themselves out, they'd already talked everything through, and this was very apparent that this was his bill, that he wanted to pass on his terms, and if you cross him, he's going to get something out of you for it.
Yeah. And one of the things that impressed me, I thought, just watching this on the video feed, was you did something that most of the other folks didn't do, which is you said, you know, if you need help understanding these issues, call me and, you know, I'll put you in contact. I'll give you information. I'll do, you know, I'll come down and I'll teach you guys what you need to know. And it that's what really impacted me, you know, 2,000 miles away watching on a little screen, was that it just seemed like none of these folks really had any interest in learning more or being educated.
Early on, we kind of thought we'd managed to make a dent. Early on in the series of speakers, we thought we managed to get a couple of them on the Republican side, on our side, because they realized one of the points. But then we just sort of kept hammering, and they all shut down. And we want to, you know, we're sitting there looking at this going, people, we're trying to teach you something that you don't understand, and it's really important that you get this. And they basically just folded their arms across the chest and said, I don't want to. And you know, ultimately, that works in our favor.
Does it? I mean, let me ask you a question. I'm going to ask you one of the same questions I asked Abby a few minutes ago, which is, what happens next? I mean, is this thing going to survive a court challenge, or is this just blatantly unconstitutional? I'm not sure, because I don't know Arizona law that well.
Well, Arizona law is still governed by the laws of the United States and under the Constitution of the United States and everything else there. I'm not sure what Abby answered because I kind of came in late, but right now we're actually looking at all of the questions of legality and constitution and what approaches we can take. And that's a serious concern, but for the most part, reading the bill is pretty self-explanatory, and especially when you take into account the comments of Chairman Kavanaugh at the hearing itself. You know, he made it expressly clear that he thinks this only applies to trans people, and that despite the language of the bill that was pointed out by the Human Resource Commission's head, because I don't know if you saw the end, but he said there was nobody from Phoenix there. He lied. There was actually the person who made this bill and who got it into the city council. The non-discrimination ordinance he made this bill in response to, that person testified. So he was lying there. And that right there tells you just how closed off he was. He's facing the person who drafted the language, and he's like, no, that's not true. But what it means is that when this thing gets to it has to go to rules from here. After rules, it's going to go to the Senate. After the Senate, it's going to end up going back to the House. And when it reaches those phases, we have the ability to shut it down because there's more people out within the general legislature who do understand that everybody has a gender identity or an expression. And if they don't understand it yet, they will by the end of next week.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. And do you expect, are we going to see a court challenge to this? Is that kind of thing? Do you know if that's in the works or... because it seems like it's a pretty easy ride at this point for this thing.
If this bill passes, we absolutely will see a court challenge to it, and we'll likely see several different court challenges to it on different grounds. Because of the broad nature of it, and because, again, they don't understand what gender expression and gender identity means, some of those cases may have absolutely nothing to do with a transgender person whatsoever. And we're able to... My basic idea, you know, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not going to speak for the large group of attorneys from all over the country we have looking at this right now. But, you know, I'm looking at it going, you know, there's a reason it's called gender expression. And I'm pretty sure there's a constitutional amendment that protects individual expression from, you know, government interference. That could just be me, though.
So, I'm curious also as to was there a lot of coordination among the speakers before you guys went in there? Because I mean, it looked like there was a couple hundred trans folks there. If I'm not, I mean, you tell me, you were in the room. How many trans folks and supporters showed up for this thing?
Well, when I did a quick head count, counting the room that we were actually in plus the overflow space, there were 240 trans people and supporters there in that space itself, which out of the 26,000 in the entire state, that's a pretty impressive number, especially when you realize that, you know, that 26,000, a third of them are under the age of 18.
Wow.
So we were able to really motivate the overall community. And it's important to realize that the effort against this is not just one or two or three people. This is a statewide effort that ties in the north, the central, and the southern part of the state, which have always historically kind of done their own thing. We're united together. We're working together. We have a large group of activists that are very, very active in combating this, and we're going to take it down. We also happen to have the complete support of every major national organization for LGBT rights in the country right now, and they're following the locals' lead.
That's good to hear, because of course we were just doing a story earlier about a trans rights flag that was asked to be removed by staffers at the Human Rights Campaign in front of the Supreme Court in D.C. yesterday. And so I'm wondering, I mean, were the major orgs like HRC and National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, National Center for Transgender Equality, were they in evidence, and what kind of a role are they playing in this?
They're assisting our efforts in a broad way. I want to express that it's not just those organizations, but, you know, you know my history with the HRC, right, Rebecca?
Not specifically, because I don't think we talked about
show. I was one of the trans mafia gals that really, really went after the HRC back in 2007 very loudly and very negatively, and has had a hard time dealing with them since. And this is
sympathize with that.
Yeah, this is a major change in terms of the HRC's approach. We have the task force is on hand, the National Center for Transgender Equality. We've got GLAAD. We've got Lambda Legal. We've got NCLR. We've got Transgender Law Center. You know, the list just keeps going on and on. Today we added in a member of the SEIU to give you an idea of just how big this is getting. We're really developing a lot of national support for this effort, and they're helping us in some cases in technology, in some cases in information that we can't get otherwise. They're reaching out to their contact lists and letting us be able to reach out to them that way. This is a serious mobilization of the national trans community, not just the local one, and we're relying on these national organizations to make that possible, especially now since this law expands its reach well beyond the trans community, despite the ignorance of the committee that passed it.
Okay. Now, the other thing that I noticed when I was researching this story this afternoon, preparing for the show, I noticed that most of the coverage of this was local news and information sources. I didn't see a lot of mainstream or LGBT media covering this. Now, once they got rid of the criminal thing, of course, we had features on Alex Witt and Melissa Harris Perry last weekend when it was still this jail the trannies bill. You know, but now I think since they softened it, I didn't see a lot of mainstream coverage. Do you know of any mainstream LGBT or straight news organizations that were covering this, or were the media mainly your local media in Arizona that were picking up the story?
Well, that's an excellent question. Last night there was an AP stringer at the meeting, and there was a stringer that apparently is working for some French newspapers. And they were the major link there. But what's fascinating is you mentioned the Mason's little speech there on the one TV show, and you mentioned the Melissa Harris Perry and so forth. And what's fascinating about that is before Mason went online, they consulted with us to help him develop his talking points to give you an idea of how this is working. And you're going to see a lot more of that over the next week in particular, really starting after Sunday as we build up to our We have a rally tonight. We have for the local community, and we have a larger rally for the entire state for the Transgender Day of Remembrance on Sunday. I think I may have mentioned that last time. And that's a huge, gigantic deal has become a rally. It was originally just going to be a little celebration of trans lives. Now it's becoming a rally. And you're going to see a lot of talk about that as well, particularly in the short term. I have to say I'm stunned at the amount of support that we're getting. I have never seen anything like this ever.
Well, that's great to hear. I hope, you know, I as I said to Abby before, I really want to follow this closely, because not only is it important to follow this, because if God help us, if this bill actually becomes law, I think we're going to see copycat laws that are going to make life a lot rougher for transgender people, but also because here's an opportunity for organizations that are taking a lot of heat from our community, and deservedly so, like the Human Rights Campaign, to say, okay,
absolutely,
you know, you're the media big shots, you've got the influence, you've got the money, let's see what you do with it now that you have an opportunity to really have an impact. And I think that's going to be important to see. So
I
in your
agree,
opinion,
100%.
they're really stepping up here.
Oh, yeah. And you know, as dissonance, I'm not exactly known for, you know, keeping my opinion to myself. And it's really important that I make that same, you know, as harsh as I can be, I also need to be very fair when it happens to be good. And I'll tell you, you know, they mess up, they're gonna hear it. But right now, they've been really coming forward. They've been really reaching out. And they're moving that extra mile right now. You know, as this moves on, we're going to be doing some training. We have a lot of protests that are being developed, that are developing out, more rallies. We know this is a fight, and we're not going to stop until it ends. We will overcome this, and I have no doubt in that, my mind there. But let's say we don't. Let's say that some major miscalculation happens, or we make a misstep, or something in our strategy is wrong, or whatever, and this bill does become law. We already know of several Midwestern and Central states that are going to pass or going to introduce copycat laws to this bill, because it's a really great way to get around non-discrimination ordinances. And in this particular bill's case, there's a line in there. It's line E, if you ever get a chance, and if you need to, I can send you the text for it. And that line E basically essentially says that for purposes of privacy areas and gender expression or identity, you can ultimately ignore just about any kind of non-discrimination ordinance out there, including sexual orientation, because we know that that's tied deeply with it in some ways.
Sure,
because race and culture are affected by it. Religion, even to an extent. So it can get really challenging at times to understand how this bill is so dangerous and why we are so active about it.
Wow, that's great, and as I said, Tony, I want you to we want to keep contact, because I want to keep people informed on what's going on here as this makes its way through. So I'm gonna probably be calling on you again to do
absolutely
this as
anytime
we get through. That's awesome, Tony. Thank you so much for calling in, and we will catch you again very soon as this bill makes its way through the legislature, and we have more to talk about.
Fantastic, good enough.
All right, talk to you soon. Thanks. All right, and that was Toni Dorsey, who we had on a couple of weeks ago. She was there. She spoke, and wow, you know, I have to say, you know, we spent a part of the show, we were talking not so nice about the Human Rights Campaign, or we should say, and it's fair to say, certain individuals working for the Human Rights Campaign, because, you know, I want to say this, because here we have two great examples of one situation where the Human Rights Campaign or people working for the Human Rights Campaign are behaving badly. And then we have another situation across the country where the Human Rights Campaign is stepping up and where they're doing what an organization of their size and influence should be doing when a situation like this occurs. So it's kind of, you know, you don't want to blame the entire organization for the actions of a single individual. You really don't. It's not fair. But You know, I say this as somebody who's worked in retail most of my life. You know, when I am at work, when I am get on the job, I am representing my company. I am the contact point of my company with the public. This same situation is true here. If a person is an HRC staffer, they are out in the field, they are at a rally, they're administering a rally, and they behave in this disgraceful way by trying to get a trans rights flag out of the picture. Well, you know what? I'm sorry, but that does reflect on the human rights campaign. If you don't want that kind of behavior done in your name, HRC, then don't allow your staffers to do it. But you know what? Here's the other thing, and this is the credibility issue, at least for me. At least for me. If something like this does happen, and it happens for somebody who is wearing your colors representing your organization, own up to it. Say, hey, we fucked up. We're sorry. We won't do it anymore. You know what? I'm telling you, and this is just me. I grant you other people feel differently. But you know what? If you're upfront and you're honest and you say, you know what, we fucked up, we made a mistake, we know what the mistake was, it won't happen again, that would have a lot more credibility with me than just trying to pretend it didn't happen and issuing a press release that directly conflicts with what people who are witnesses on the ground, extremely credible witnesses on the ground, are saying actually happened. Don't deny it. Own up to it and say, hey, you know what? We made a mistake. We'll learn from it. We're not going to do it anymore. To me, that shows responsibility and it shows credibility. Hey, we know we made a mistake. We're not going to pretend it didn't happen and we're going to learn from it and it won't happen again. That's what would impress me. And the fact that they're unwilling to do that says something, I think. And it's not something that is very good, okay? So, you know, I'm kind of torn. Kudos to HRC and the other organizations and the actions that they're taking out in Arizona. And shame on you, HRC, for this bullshit that you pulled in Washington, D.C. You should know better than that. I mean, you know, I feel like I'm a schizophrenic here. I swear to God. Oh, no, my God. Please, no. What a show, Mr. Mike. I am, ready to fall down here. This was awesome. I want to thank everybody for tuning in, for being patient with us, for sticking around while Mr. Mike and his amazing dexterity with those phone lines tonight. We really gave him a workout. And we will catch you all next week. And I am going to, I think, go and fall down or something because I am drained. We will catch you next week, everybody. Have a good night, everybody. Good night.
Country tears of thee, sweet land of liberty of thee I sing, land where my fathers died, land of the pilgrims' pride, from every mountainside, let freedom ring, and if America is to be a great nation, this must become true. Q1.